now that we got rid of those guys. I don't know about you, but growing up for me was kind of awkward. Fitting into certain places was challenging. When I was younger, in my elementary years, up through third, fourth grade, I kind of had different people, and during that time, you kind of just fit in with anyone, right? But then something changes in your fourth, fifth, sixth grade years that all of a sudden, you find yourself looking for places to fit in. I remember in third grade, very kind of pivotal part of my life, when I struggled to read, and I did up until college, actually, I struggled to read and comprehend things well. And so I got assigned to read this paragraph, and I didn't know one of the words. And it was a normal, easy word for them. But for me, I struggled, and I went to read it, and I botched it so bad, and the class collectively laughed. And I thought, please don't ever pick on me to read in class again. And immediately I felt like there's a group of people that's over there and I don't fit with them. And that was in third grade. I remember in sixth grade where I struggled to figure out where I fit in. I wasn't the cool kid and I wasn't the nerd. And I went to a private school, so there was only about 25 of us in our class. So if you're on the outs with a few, you're on the outs with all of them, it seemed. And I didn't know where I fit in, so I tried to do different things to fit in, and it just didn't work. Or maybe in your life, you would gather a little bit differently, and you'd say, well, I remember, as I remember some of this, but maybe for you it was during that lunchroom time, that lunch hour in school, where you walk into the cafeteria and you have all these tables and chairs that are set up, and you go and you look, and you get there a little bit late, and when you get there, it seems like all the tables are filled, all the chairs are full, and you're looking around, and maybe in a larger school where there's hundreds of people, you're looking in the cafeteria saying, okay, where do I fit in with this group? And you look over here, and these people that you wouldn't associate, you don't sit with them, and there might be an empty chair, but I don't fit in with those guys. And then you look over here, and you, nah, not those. And over here, nah, not, I won't sit there. And then you look, and you find a group that you say, I would like to sit with that group. So then you look for the empty chair. And you hope that it's not an awkward moment, right? But for many of us, we found it to be awkward moments in junior high and in senior high. But man, I'm so glad that that is all over as an adult, right? I don't have to worry about fitting in with anybody as an adult. It's so easy now that I'm a grown-up. I fit in with everybody, don't you? I mean, just look at our Facebook posts. I mean, I'm so glad for what your kid did last week. I mean, absolutely, and we fit in because, I mean, mine didn't, you know. But do you see the problem? It never stops. We're always wondering, what table can we sit at? What circle of friends can we relate to and be around? It's always there. And so here's what we've done in our culture. We've identified our circles, haven't we? Do you see what I've done? I dressed in a way that identified my circle. Rutgers. Now, two of my daughters are going to Rutgers right now, and this was given to me by my daughter. So instantly by wearing this, especially if I go into Camden and Rutgers campus, I walk out in and, oh yeah, you're one of us. Sit at our table because you're like us. And so we kind of do that in our Christian circles. What have we done with that? Our Christian t-shirts, right? And we have really clever, amazing t-shirts that we wear. And it's, oh yeah, I love the cross. Or the cross around the necklace or whatever. And we have all these things to try to define our circle. And so we really work at that. This applies to so many different parts of life, doesn't it? Our gender defines our circle. Our race defines our circle. We say, no, it doesn't define us anymore. I think the race thing has actually gotten a little worse. Interesting. We can go further, and I wrote down a whole bunch of things, and I'll just define a few. Our socioeconomic standing, right? Ladies, if you wear, you carry around a certain purse, I forget the name of it. It's not like Kmart brand or something like that. What is it? Coach. Oh, yeah, there it is. All right. You carry that, and you all of a sudden, you identify your socioeconomic standing, right? And we have all kinds of things. The car you drive. If you drive a Tesla over a smart car, it gives us these circles that all of a sudden we fit in or we don't fit in, and it defines us a little bit more clearly. Our political parties. Oh, did we go there? Oh, like that's as far as we got to go because, I mean, we're so polarized there. We can't say, well, I'm this or I'm that because all of a sudden the friction gets going because this is my circle and that's where I want to stay. And look, you don't fit in with my circle if you think they are or that is or if you are. Oh, and let's get a little bit deeper since I've made us all uncomfortable. Religion. Is religion a circle? Oh, wow. Perhaps the most divided time of the week is Sunday mornings because this is our circle. This is where we are, and we appreciate each other because we're like each other. We love Jesus, and we'll sing songs about Jesus and all this other stuff. Can I get a little more granular with that, a little deeper with the religion thing? I mean, it's what denomination you are. But let's go deeper because I've been doing this a long time. The type of music you have up front. Listen, maybe this is your first time here, or maybe you've been coming a while and you saw me wearing a sweatshirt and immediately you thought, oh, great. Or maybe last week you saw that I was wearing a suit jacket and you thought, oh, great. I had blue jeans on both weeks, so we're good, right? But you see where we are. It's that we have these circles that we say, we agree to these terms. I agree that it's just got to be this way. This is the only way that you can worship. This is the only way that you can do this religion thing. This is the only way that God would be happy with you. If you wear this, if you sing this, if you carry this type of Bible, and you have the list, and in that list, we put it on the table, and we all sit at the table, and we have this echo chamber that says, yup, I agree with you, you agree with me, we must be right. And someone else that comes that doesn't think like us, dress like us, and talk like us, it's like, I don't know if I could sit there. And they walk in the cafeteria and they walk up to that table and they're looking and they're saying, I just don't know if I can because I'm not like them. Here's the truth. We surround ourselves with people that are just like us, don't we? We surround ourselves with people that are just like us. Have you ever thought about whether that's right or not? Have we ever stopped to consider whether what we are doing by surrounding ourselves with people that are just like us is the best thing to do? And can I go a little further and kind of push in a little bit and ask, do you think Jesus was like that? Isn't that interesting? Jesus wasn't like that. Jesus isn't like that. Jesus did not surround himself with people that were just like him. As a matter of fact, you'd find himself surrounding himself with people that were not at all like him. People that really wouldn't fit in. And he had a different way of doing things. So check that out with me. John chapter 4. John chapter 4. In our day, I think we've grown more diverse while growing more divided. And I think that's in the church and outside of the church. I think that is our culture. And I think to go a little bit further, we begin to demonize groups that aren't like us. Have you thought about that? We sit in our circle and we demonize those that are not like us. John chapter 4 is a fascinating chapter. I've preached through John 4 several times in the lifespan of me preaching, and I've studied, and I just love this text. So that's why I was excited to preach it, but I think it has such serious ramifications for where we are today in our culture. So John chapter 4, verse 1 says, "Now when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John," verse 2, "although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples," which is interesting, and verse 3, "he left Judea, departed again for Galilee." So if you go to Judea to Galilee, it's kind of like going from North Jersey to South Jersey. Okay, it's going just from a lateral standpoint, it's just going from here to here. But then the next verse is interesting. It says, "and he had," circle or underline or highlight that word, "had," he had to pass through Samaria. Now, understand, Samaria, it, like North Jersey, South Jersey kind of thing, it's kind of like going from there to there. And if you were to take the turnpike down, you would have to pass through certain towns to get from here to here. In this, the culture, the geographical location of Samaria is, it's right in the middle. It's kind of like where Great Adventure is, right? So in order to go from north to south or south to north, you would go and you'd have to go through this. But what they did was they built a new road, because the problem with the Jewish people of that day is they didn't like Samaritans at all. They were half-breeds. They were like a waste of God's energy and creation. They wasted your air. Their carbon footprint just shouldn't be around. They did not like the Samaritans, not even a little bit. So in order to go from north to south, you had to go through this one town, or south to north, whatever it is, you had to, but you didn't have to anymore, because what they did was they built a road, a highway, if you will, around it, and most, if not all, of the Jewish people that day would say, "Hey, listen, we don't want to go to that area, so we're going to avoid that by going around, and it might take a little bit longer, but listen, God would be honored with us taking a little bit longer instead of going through that God-forsaken town." You follow me? That's the context here. So he says he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to the town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. So here they are going through this area, and he had to go through this. He had to go through Samaria. It was a statement that you'd look at and you say, okay, this is an emphatic direction call that Jesus is making. We are going point A to point B. This is where I have to be. And it even, John even records the very details, which is important. So it's not just a fictitious story, but he's recording the details as to exactly where they stopped. So they stop at this well. This is Jacob's well. This is a famous kind of a well. And so he gets to this area where he's not supposed to be. It's kind of like going to the cafeteria and going to the table that you know that you just really don't fit in with that table. You look at it and you're like, yeah, they don't like me so much. So Jesus walks into this area, stops at the well, in the sixth hour, so this is at the hottest time of the day. This is an important note, because at this time of the day, no one comes to the well. If you're going out, you don't go out and go to the well to get water. They didn't have the running water like we do. It's not just turn on the faucet. They had to go to a well and be able to get the water. And so the people in that area would not go out during the middle of the day, during the hottest part of the day. So the only ones that would come are the people that were kind of in hiding. The people that are too embarrassed to be with other people, and people that avoided other people. Not really the introverts per se, but it would be people that were just the outcasts. So you have the Samaritan in Samaria at this well, at the worst part of the day. And here Jesus, a Jewish person with his other friends, the disciples, they're Jewish people, all hanging out here to get a drink. Now, there's some interesting things that are going on here, because here's the next part in verse 7. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. That's what she was planning to do. She was the outcast. She was not expecting to see anybody there, especially Jewish people. And she recognizes that they're Jewish. Jesus says to her, "Give me a drink." In verse 8, for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. And so it's as if they stopped there, and Jesus said, "I'm too tired to go on. Hey, listen, why don't you guys go in and find some food, go to McDonald's or Arby's or Chick-fil-A, and find some food for us and bring it back, and I'm just going to hang out here." Why? Was Jesus just being lazy? Was he too tired to go anywhere? No, he had to go to this place. He had a mission to accomplish. And so this Samaritan woman doesn't give her name, which makes it even odder. This Samaritan woman comes up and Jesus says, "Give me a drink." Now stop for a second. He stops at the well because he's thirsty. Why doesn't he just grab his own drink? Because he didn't have anything to pull the water out with. He's a little unprepared. Anybody get unprepared in different times? You're like, "Oh man, I forgot about that," you know? Well, the Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask me for a drink? A woman of Samaria," not even her name. I'm just a woman. I'm a nobody from Samaria. I'm somebody you would not want to be around at all. You shouldn't even be talking to me. You know better than this. We do not sit at the same table, right? And we don't ever plan on sitting at the right table. What's wrong with you? Look, has the sun gotten to your head a little bit? She's calling him out. "For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Well, Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God, who it is that's saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." If you only knew who you were talking to. And we look at that and we read backwards with it and we say, "Oh man, what a statement by Jesus. He's going to give her living water." It's kind of like you turn on the faucet, it's always on. And she's just thinking, "Man, the sun's really gotten to you, man. Like, you're a sandwich short of a picnic basket, right?" Because the woman said, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with. What, are you going to jump down the well yourself and get some water? Yeah, I'd like to see that happen." He says, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water?" I mean, listen, this whole idea of getting living water, this is crazy talk that you have going on here. What are you thinking? You're like an idiot or something. Are you greater than, circle that, underline that, are you greater than Jacob? You see, Jacob, the historical context of this, Jacob comes and he's the one that started this whole thing and brought all his animals and everything, and so it's Jacob's well. And so he's saying very clearly, "Are you greater than the one that started this, Jacob, whose name was changed into Israel? Are you greater than that one?" What's the answer to that? It's yes. Of course I am. It says, "He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." So Jesus, how do you answer that question? Like, how great are you? You're not even prepared for the day. You're like, look, you're a little messed up and you're way out of your league. You're not with the people you should be with. You're sitting at the wrong table. You're talking to the wrong person. You ask the wrong question. Listen, you're so far away from where you should go. I just want to end this conversation right now. And so I'm saying this question right back at you and saying, what, are you greater than Jacob now? Mic drop, walk away. Do you think she had an attitude problem? I mean, it was a little snarky. Wouldn't you agree? Okay, I would. So, Jesus says to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water," verse 13, will be thirsty again. You're going to lower your bucket down, you pull it up, and you're going to drink of this water, like this water bottle that I have here. If I were to drink from this, guess what? I'll be thirsty again in just a few moments, right? You understand that. And Jesus is saying that. You drink from this water, and you're going to be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. You see, he's giving something to her. That wasn't like this. This is what she came for. She came for that bottle of water. She came for that just to quench her thirst, to take it back and to be able to have some water to take care of her thirst in that moment. But Jesus was saying, there's a thirst that's way deeper that I've come to give you something for. And I love how this continues. The woman said, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." You see, she's saying, I really don't like being here anyway. And if you're going to give me a water truck that I could take home and leave there, I'm good with that. Because I don't like coming to here at this hour. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. I'd like to be home watching the soaps or whatever I would watch in the afternoon like everybody else. I'd like to fit in like everybody. I'd like to be able to hang out and they had lunch and I'm not having lunch because I don't fit in. I'm invisible to them. I'm a nobody to them. And here I am. I would love to be there, but I'm not able to be there. Go ahead, you know, Jewish person, you. I don't even know your name, but I don't care because you've got crazy talk going on. So Jesus' response back is so weird. Do you find that Jesus' response are weird sometimes? I do. Because this is so outside the norm. And some people would speculate and say, you know, is this like a pickup line? Hey, give me a drink. No, it had nothing to do with that. And here in verse 16, Jesus says to her, "Go call your husband and come here." What a turn. He's saying, listen, here's what I want to do. I want to get to the heart of your story. So I'm going to give you a statement that's going to cut the chase. We're going to cut past all the bushes that are in the way. We're going to go right through it, right down here, and we're going to get to the heart of your story. Go call your husband and have him come here so we can have a conversation. So she knows that she would be better fitting into a Jerry Springer show than to be with this guy. Because here's her response. She answers, "I have no husband." Was she young? No. Jesus replies to her, "You are right in saying I have no husband. For you have had five husbands. And the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true." So he goes to the heart of the issue because she is in this place where nobody else is, in the shameful kind of a life that she has lived. Her past is just a disgrace, right? She doesn't, when she goes into the cafeteria, you know, there's an empty seat, and here's what they do. They kind of pull it away, right? And they set their book bag down on it. Have you ever seen that? They all kind of turn their backs at her because, listen, she doesn't have one scarlet letter. She's got five. Right? She is the disgrace of the town, and probably everyone knew about her. And what do you do when this Samaritan woman, this one, she's not even named. She's just a nobody. When she walks into the room, what does everybody else do? Oh, there she is. What does she hear? The hushed whispers of everyone else saying, "Oh, she's the one. Did you hear she's with so-and-so now?" And we don't know if all five died. We kind of don't think that all five died. If they did, that'd be really weird, right? But it would seem that she was the negative talk of the town. She would fit on a Jerry Springer show and everybody be watching like, oh, this one, yeah, you got to tune in. She's really messed up. She's the worst in the town. And she doesn't fit in with us. So here's some fascinating things. I think that she's literally sitting at the shame table by herself. She has a sordid past that she's ashamed of herself. I'm not married. Technically, you're right. You're living with someone right now, and you have had 5 husbands. She's sitting at the shame table. And being at the well, it just indicates everything points in this one direction. At this time, at this place, and not wanting to talk to Jesus, she is absolutely the outcast. And the fascinating thing about this conversation is here's Jesus having a conversation with her, and she's beginning to open up. And as the conversation continues, here's what happens. She says back in verse 19, the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." So now the tables have turned. All of a sudden, she goes from feeling like she is ashamed, she is a nobody, she shouldn't be there, and this person that she's talked to probably hates her anyway. She turns from that and feels the acceptance of Jesus. A conversation with her and feels that and begins to then turn back and say, hey, wait a second. I sense that you're a prophet. You're a person of God. So please tell me, help me understand where do people worship? Now listen, if this person came into church, any church, and asked a pastoral kind of a question, like a really deep theological question, how would you respond to that? Wouldn't you say back, why do you care? The only one you worship is the next guy you're going to have at your house. Wouldn't you be condemning? Wouldn't you see that as part of the conversation? But she feels like she can talk to Jesus. Feels respected even. It's really fascinating. I'm going to speculate just a little bit. And maybe you'll disagree with my speculation. You see, Jesus is declaring from the very beginning that he knows about her past. He knows all about her. And I would guess and speculate in that there was probably a time back here in her past that she loved God. I mean, way back before husband one, that she had some sort of a relationship with God. Maybe as a teenager or something like that, because she's asking a question that's been on her heart for years. Maybe she's gone to these religious things and she knows about God and she had some sort of a relationship or desire to be with God at some point. But life has its ups and downs, doesn't it? And in my speculation, just simply speculation, I would look and say probably because of this question, she had this back here, but then somewhere along the line, husband one came and marriage fell apart, and then husband two came and marriage fell apart, and her relationship or walk with God or understanding of God, it distanced. And now being with God was just part of her past. And the question is, can I ever be back where God is? Would have me to be with him. I know a lot of people that are that way. I know a lot of people that are, they've got things in their past, these skeletons in their closet that they're hiding. And they've declared, God's probably done with me. Because skeleton 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So they walk around with a chip on their shoulder, you know, to kind of hide the pain that's inside of them. I read this poem that I want to read this morning. I think it's so good. It's a prayer by Michelle Quist. Really awesome. It says, "I have fallen, Lord, once more. I cannot go on. I will never succeed. I am ashamed, and I don't dare look at you. And yet I've struggled, Lord, for I knew you were right near me, bending over me, watching, but temptation blew in like a hurricane. And instead of looking at you, I turned my head away. I stepped aside while you stood silent and sorrowful, like the spurned fiancé who sees his loved one carried off by his rival. When the wind died down as suddenly as it had arisen, when the lightning ceased after proudly streaking the darkness, all of a sudden I found myself alone, Lord, ashamed, disgusted with sin in my hands. This sin that I selected as a customer selects his purchase. This sin that I've paid for now but cannot return because the storekeeper is no longer there. This tasteless sin, this odious sin. The sin that now sickens me, that I once wanted, but now I want no more. That I imagined, sought, played with, fondled for a long time. That I finally embraced while I coldly bypassed you. My arms outstretched, my eyes and heart irresistibly drawn. This sin that I've grasped and consumed with gluttony. It's mine now. But it possesses me. As the spider web holds captive the fly. It's mine. Sticks to me, flows in my veins, it fills my heart. It has slipped into everywhere as darkness slips into the forest at dusk and fills all the patches of light. I cannot get rid of it, Lord. I run from it like the master of an unwanted and mangy dog, but it catches up with me and rubs joyfully against my legs. Everyone must notice it. I'm so ashamed that I feel like crawling to avoid being seen. I'm ashamed of being seen by my friends. I'm ashamed most of all by being seen by you, Lord, because you love me. But I forgot you. I forgot you because I was thinking only of myself, and one can't think of several persons at once. I must choose, and I chose. But now your voice, your look, and your love, they hurt me. They weigh me down. They weigh me down more than my sin. Lord, Lord, please don't look at me. Don't look at me like that because I'm naked and dirty, down and shattered with no strength left. I dare not make any more promises to you. I can only stand bowed before you. Come on, child, look up, he says. Isn't it mainly your vanity that's wounded? If you loved me, you would grieve, but you would also trust me. Do you think that there's a limit to my love for you? Do you think for a moment I have stopped loving you? But you rely only on yourself, son. You must rely on me. Ask my pardon and get up quickly. You see, it's not falling that is the worst, but staying on the ground. Isn't that good? Shame often grips us like that. Our past grabs onto us, and we feel like we need to stay there. We try to push it away, but I like how they say it. Like a mangy dog, it runs back and rubs up against our leg. I would imagine that this Samaritan woman, this unnamed and unknown Samaritan woman, felt a bit like this. And Jesus is having this conversation with her, and all of a sudden she begins to open up about herself and open up about her thoughts. And Jesus responds in this way. Verse 21, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father." He's saying it's not about that sacred place. I'm greater than sacred places. Do you remember that message a couple weeks ago, right? You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him, not worship out of place, but to worship him, that the focus is only on the Father. It's not on your past. It's not on your whatever you're in. It's always and only on him. The focus is always saying, God, you've invited me to the table. You're talking with me. It says, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. So the woman says back, this unnamed woman, that's all it says about her. I know that the Messiah is coming. He's called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. Now pause for a moment. Do you remember the end of chapter 2 last week? We talked about chapter 2, where Jesus goes in and he's talking with people and some are believing, and it says he did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people. Now, he's talking with the religious people, the respectable people, the people in town you want to hang out with. Now he's talking with a Samaritan woman. Do you entrust yourself to a person that is totally off the charts, way bad, got scarlet letters all over her, is not trustable, everybody avoids her? Do you entrust yourself to this person? It's fascinating. Because here's what Jesus does when she asks about this. We're looking for the Messiah, and do you know anything about this? And Jesus responds and says in verse 26, I who speak to you am he. Do you see what he's doing? He says here, the circle that I have here, this table, this chair, is yours. Come pull up and sit with me, because I'm the Messiah, and I want you to know that. I want you to get this. Of all the people, she should be rebuked. She should be told how lousy she is. She should be judged. She should be criticized. And you fill in the list. She should be told the truth of how bad her life is. And Jesus says, come, sit at my table. Verse 27 through 30 is cool because the disciples come back. They got the Chick-fil-A, they got their Arby's, you know, the one went to Applebee's like that, and the other one went to Texas Roadhouse, so they're carrying in all their stuff, and they got their grub going on, and they come to sit down, and here's their response. They marveled. I mean, there's only a few times it says they marveled, and here's one of the times they were marveled, they were astonished, they're like, what's going on here? That he was talking with a woman. But no one said it out loud. They just had it going in their thoughts, right? They didn't say, what do you seek, or why are you talking with her? So the woman left, but she did something interesting. She left her water jar. She came to get water, and now all of a sudden the water's not so important because she has something much better going on in her heart. Isn't this awesome? She's got a taste of the living water, and so she goes back to the town, and she says in verse 29, come see a man who told me all that I ever did. And they said, whoa, 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 wait, wait, wait. All that you did? Like, really? That, oh, man, that must have been messed up. And she says, can this be the Christ, the Messiah? Well, they went out of town and were coming to him. And while they do, so she's the first missionary. Isn't that amazing? It says, meanwhile, the disciples were urging him, saying, Rabbi, eat, teacher, eat. But he says, I have food to eat that you do not know about. Listen, bud, we got a Big Mac for you. We know you love Big Macs. So come on, have a bite of, listen. And he says, I have food that you are not aware of. Well, where'd you get the food? We walked all this way. You could have told us. We would have just sat here and ate with you. It says, the disciples said, has anyone brought him something to eat? And Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. My nourishment comes at a deeper level, is what he's saying. Do you not say there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest. Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white unto harvest. Do you think they got this? They're probably like, you waited 4 months to get, I'm really confused about all of this. John gets it, and he writes it in later on for us to glean from. Because what he's saying through all of this, he's saying, listen, I'm about my Father's business, and in my Father's business, what he has called me to do is he's called me to go to the circles where people are not allowed to talk to anyone, to go to the one that feels ashamed, to go to the one that feels like an outcast, to go to the one that nobody respects, to go to the one that is just a horrible person to be around. And I've come to fulfill my Father's desire and will to go and to reach out to those people. I didn't come for the healthy, I came for the sick. And the fields are white unto harvest, he says. They're ready for a harvest. And how did he get to that field? He had to go into a place that everyone else says, don't go there. Go down to verse 39. The Samaritans come, and it says, many Samaritans from the town believed in him because the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed for 2 days. Could you imagine this? The Samaritan saying to this Jewish guy, look, you got to stay. Help us understand more. Teach us, teach us, teach us. So he stayed 2 more days, and many more believed because of his word. And they said, the woman, is no longer because of what you said we believe, for we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this is indeed the Savior of the world. Jesus stays there for 2 days, and many believe. Listen, revival broke out because of this one woman, unnamed woman, who had a sordid past. God used her in such a significant way. When she didn't have anything going for her from what anybody else said, and God used her in such a significant way that her town was changed because of it. Isn't that awesome? I don't know what your past is like, but do you know Jesus is greater than your past? Listen, I don't know what circle you're trying to be in, but do you know that Jesus is greater than your circle? Listen, I don't know about your trust issues and your struggles there, but do you know that Jesus is greater than your trust issues? And I don't know what you think is sacred, but do you realize that Jesus is greater than your sacred place? Do you realize that Jesus is greater? Man. He broke the circles that people created because Jesus is greater than our circles. Maybe you've wanted to fit into a circle for a long time. Maybe you have some things in your past that everybody else looks at and says, you can't fit in my circle, and they turn their back to you. Or maybe it's something that you're not even aware of, and you're like, I just feel like I don't fit in anywhere. Can I just remind you that for God so loved the world, the you and me, that he gave his only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, that he loves us that much, that whoever believes in him shall have eternal life. He loves us that much that we're so accepted with him already. His love was right there ready for us just to say, I believe. It's, come sit at my table. I paid for the table. Paid for the chair. Come sit in my circle. My circle is this unlimited circle that I want everyone to be in this circle with me. And I prepared this for you. Come sit with me. There's room at the table. Do you know what I call this table? The grace table. Right? It's not the, well, I'm wearing this table. Or I'm wearing this table. Or I'm not like that table. It's all about God's grace. is that he loves us so much that he had to go to where we are. He had to get to our family. He had to get to my past and my present. He had to, and he used this person to get there. And he had to because he loves us. Regardless of what you've done in the past, regardless of what you've been through, regardless of what you're involved in now, he says, I love you. No matter your gender, no matter your race, no matter your socioeconomical standing, no matter who you vote for or don't vote for. Isn't that great? Whew. God's grace is unlimited. So would you sit at his table? Can I make a second application? We all create circles, don't we? And here's my question. Who won't you let sit with you? Is it the person that hurt you? That you say, you can't sit with me anymore? The one that betrayed you can't sit with me anymore. The one that is a shame for everyone in town to look at, you can't sit here. The one that smells horrible because they're homeless, you can't sit here. The one that's not the right race, the one that doesn't vote the right, the one that's not in the right religion. Because for some reason, we're just like everybody else. We create circles for the people that are just like us. But that's not the way Jesus was at all. And so if there's anybody that God has on your heart right now that you say, I don't know that I want them at my table. Because you don't know that you want to forgive them. You don't know that you want to be kind to them. You don't know that you can go there. Would you just stop and say, God, give me the strength to be Jesus? I love what the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians chapter 4. He's writing to the church of Ephesus. And he says in verse 4, chapter 4, verse 32, he says, and be kind one to another, right? Tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Do you ever have to forgive somebody? Yes, at least on a weekly basis, sometimes daily. All right, tender-hearted. You have to be tender-hearted? Just drive somewhere. You'll find tender-heartedness. It's necessary. Do you have to be kind? Absolutely. They just took the last bowl of cereal. You were looking forward to it, right? You've got this all over the place. And I love what Paul says. He says, and be kind one to another. Tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Why? Because I, Paul, have done such a great job at forgiving people. I'm so awesome at being tender-hearted and kind and loving. Is that what he said? No. He says, why? Why do you forgive? Why are you tenderhearted? Why are you kind? Because Christ was for you. Because he said, here's the table, and I've come to give you grace. I've loved you. Sit with me. And he tells us to do the same. So as a church, I believe the greatest impact we can have in our community is when we offer grace tables, grace circles, or circles of grace, however you want to say it, to all those around us. It's not that we get rid of truth because Jesus was all about truth, but that we are filled with grace and we're saying, come to the table that Jesus made, because I didn't make this table. And I'm not interested in making this table. Come sit with us because this is where Jesus is. And it'll be challenging, it'll be hard, it'll be difficult, but God will give us the strength. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you for all that you did. The example that you give to us of how you dealt with the Samaritan woman is just radical. It's amazing. It's outside of the way we think. So God, thank you. And help us, Lord, to be more like Jesus. Help us to look for people to invite into the circle that you've made. Lord, recognizing that the harvest is plentiful, recognizing that there's many people like this Samaritan woman that need that grace, that need someone to say, hey, you're welcome here. Lord, help us to be faithful to you in that. We thank you. It's through Jesus I pray. Amen.